quiet. Somebody's going to make an announcement.
Hey, everybody, keep quiet.
They went to the court.
Hey, God.
Columbia presents Corwin.
So what?
Yes, so what?
Tonight, in the ninth of his series of programs for CBS, Norman Corwin brings you his production of The Cliché Expert by Frank Sullivan. Cliché Expert by Frank Sullivan, with a distinguished actor of stage, screen, and radio, Roland Young, in the title role. And Betty Comden and Adolph Green as star witnesses. Bob Trout will serve as courtroom reporter and commentator. Will the spectators kindly file in quietly and take their seats? Leave your cameras at the door, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bob Trout broadcasting from the radio booth at the court where the hearing of expert testimony by Magnum Arbuthnot is about to begin. Monsieur Arbuthnot, as you may have heard, is the world's leading connoisseur of the cliché and twice winner of a Pulitzer Prize for the most hackneyed phrase of the year. Now, in the moment or so which we have before the proceedings get underway, we can perhaps tell you something of the background of the word cliché, meaning trite phrase. This term comes from the French verb cliché, meaning to stereotype, and in order further to explain its meaning to you, we have invited Pierre Pourboire, the famous French cliché expert and disciple of Arbuthnot, to say a few words before the session gets underway. Here is Monsieur Pourboire.
Bonjour, Monsieur, Mesdames. Le mot cliché à l'origine signifiait matrice, c'est de papier mâché, employé pour les rafles proprement mécaniques. Aujourd'hui, il est couramment employé pour désigner une phrase ou un terme banal. Il est donc devenu le synonyme pour une expression verbatim.
Thank you very much, Monsieur Pourboire, for your enlightening comment. Ladies and gentlemen, a copy of Monsieur Pourboire's talk may be had by writing to him in care of your local post office. And now I see that Judge Mostel has entered the courtroom, and the hearing is ready to begin. Of course, as you've probably read in the newspapers, Mr. Arbuthnot is too keen a man to be questioned by any single interrogator, so he'll be quizzed by a battery of leading attorneys who will take turns questioning him on a variety of subjects, including clichés of women, wine, and song. Mr. Arbuthnot is already on the witness stand now. The clerk of the court is about to swear him in, so we transfer you to our microphone suspended directly over the witness's head.
You solemnly swear that the testimony you will give the court is the cliché, the whole cliché, and nothing but the cliché?
I do. Mr. Todd, the first interrogator, has left the counsel table and has advanced to question Mr. Arbuthnot.
Your name is Magnum J. Arbuthnot.
It is.
You are a qualified expert in the use of the cliché.
I am.
As an expert in the use of the cliché, are you prepared to testify here today regarding its application in topics of sex, love, matrimony, and so on?
I am.
Very good. Now, Mr. Arbuthnot, what is love?
Love is blind.
Good. What does love do?
Love makes the world go round.
Whom does a young man fall in love with?
With the only girl in the world.
Whom does a young woman fall in love with?
With the only boy in the world.
Good. Now, what do they fall in love at?
At? What do you mean, at?
Well, don't ask me. You're supposed to be the cliché expert, not I. Again, what do they fall in love at?
Let me think. Oh, we can score at first sight.
Correct. Now, who loves a lover?
Who loves a lover?
Yes, don't stall, Mr. Arbuthnot.
All the world loves a lover.
Describe the only girl in the world.
Her eyes are like stars, her feet are like pearls, her lips are ruby, her cheek is damask, and her form divine.
Haven't you forgotten something?
Eyes, teeth, lips, cheek, form. No, sir, I don't think so.
Her hair?
Oh, certainly. How stupid of me. Yes. She has hair like spun gold.
Very good, Mr. Arbuthnot. Now, will you describe the only man?
He's a square shooter who plays the game. There's something fine about him that rings true. When he meets the girl of his choice, the future mother of his children, he can look her in the eye.
How?
Without flinching.
Now, Mr. Arbuthnot, when the only man falls in love madly with the only girl, what does he do?
He walks on air.
Yes, I know, but what does he do? I mean, what is it he pops?
Oh, excuse me. He pops the question, of course.
Then, what do they plight?
They plight their troth.
And what happens after that?
They get married.
And where are marriages made?
Marriages are made in heaven.
What happens after the marriage?
Oh, they settle down, raise a family, and live happily ever afterwards, unless...
Unless what?
Unless he's a fool for a pretty face.
And if he is?
Then they come to the parting of the ways.
Startled not? Very enlightening. Thank you very much.
But I'm not through yet, Mr. Todd.
No?
No. There's another side to it.
There is? What side?
The seamy side. There are, you know, men who are wolves in sheep clothing. And there are also lovely women who stoop to folly.
My goodness. Describe these men you speak of, please.
They are snakes in the grass who do not place woman on a pedestal. They are cads who kiss and tell. They are fiends in human form who would rob a woman of her most priceless possession.
What is that?
Her honor.
What does a woman do when a snake in the grass tries to rob her of her honor?
She defends her honor.
How?
By repulsing his advances and scorning his embraces.
How does she do that?
By saying, "Sir, I believe you forget yourself." Or, "Please take your arm away." Or, "I'll kindly thank you to remember I'm a lady." Or, "Let's not spoil it all."
Suppose she doesn't say any of those things.
In that case, she takes the first false step.
Where does the first false step take her?
Down the primrose path.
Where does it lead?
To a life of shame.
What is a life of shame?
A life of shame is a fate worse than death.
Mr. Arbuthnot, your explanation of the correct application of a cliché in these matters has been most instructive. And I know that all cliché users will know exactly how to respond hereafter when during a conversation, sex,
What you want to say is when sex rears its ugly head, isn't it?
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Todd.
That is all for this line of inquiry, if you please, Your Honor.
Very well. There will be a brief recess before we resume with the inquiry on gastronomy. Card is this at?
This is Bob Trout again, and for the benefit of those who tuned in late, we are broadcasting the public hearing of testimony by M.J. Arbuthnot, the world's leading clinician. He's just testified concerning matters relating to love and sex, and at the moment he's chatting amiably with counsel and casting his eyes around the courtroom. Now and then he recognizes somebody among the distinguished assembly and nods in her direction. Now, I understand from the order of things that he'll next be questioned on astronomy. And for this reason, we have with us here Professor Herschel Azimuth, who will comment on what we're likely to hear in the examination soon to follow. Professor Azimuth.
I'm frank to say that I have no idea of just what tack Mr. Arbuthnot is going to take concerning clichés of astronomy. Because as far as I know, there are very few astronomical clichés in current usage. It is possible that he may discuss such matters as the sidereal and synodic periods of the moon.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Azimuth. Ladies and gentlemen, I must apologize for a slight error. I was under the impression that the next subject to be covered was astronomy, but I just received word here in the booth that the subject is gastronomy, which is an altogether different dish. So, if you don't mind, Professor Azimuth...
What was that about a dish, Mr.?
No, nothing at all, Professor Azimuth. Sorry for this interruption, ladies and gentlemen, but we are almost ready to resume the testimony, and Mr. Bosker, who is himself an expert gourmet, is going to take over the interrogation on gastronomy. He is standing directly beneath the witness box, adjusting his pince-nez.
Mr. Arbuthnot? As an expert in the use of the cliché, you're a pretty busy man, aren't you?
Mr. Boscott, you never spoke a truer word. Half the time, I don't know whether I'm coming or going.
Really? Well, suppose you tell us something about that before we get into clichés eating. What makes you so busy?
Why, taking care of my livestock is a man-sized job in itself.
Your livestock?
Yes, at least once every day I have to beard the lion, keep the wolf from the law, let the cat out of the bag, take the bull by the horns, count my chickens before they hatch, shoe the wild mare, make sure the horse isn't put behind the cart or stolen before I lock the barn door, and see that my goat isn't gotten.
Well, I should think the chores you mentioned would be exercise enough for any man, Mr. Arbuthnot. Doesn't all that exercise do you in?
I should say it does. You know how I sleep?
How?
Like a log. When I don't sleep like a log, I sleep the sleep of the just. In other words, I no sooner hit the hay than I'm in the arms of Morpheus.
What is it that you strike, Mr. Arbuthnot?
Whom do I strike?
No, what do you strike?
Oh, I strike bargains.
What else do you do?
Well, let me see. I enclose herewith. I beg to remain. I deem it a privilege. I cast into the discard. Oh, that reminds me. You realize why I'm not wearing my pearls?
Why not?
Swine got them.
Oh, I see. Now, Mr. Arbuthnot, if it's true that you're so busy...
Why, I'm so busy I haven't got a minute I can call my own. When I'm not playing second fiddle, I'm not to Newcastle with coals or burying the hatchet or attending to my oil business.
You're in the oil business?
Well, rather the troubled waters business. I pour every Tuesday from 4 to 6.
Well, I'd certainly like to see you sometime when you're doing all those things together.
You mean at one and the same time? Well, rest assured I can do them.
No doubt. Now, Mr. Arbuthnot, let's get down to the main issue. You're an expert in the use of the cliché as applied to matters of eating, are you not?
That is correct, sir.
In that case, perhaps you will be kind enough to act as our guide as we attempt to shed some light upon the incursions of the trite into the realm of gastronomy.
You said a mouthful, Mr. Boscott.
Thank you. Now then, what kind of eater are you?
I'm a hearty eater.
Can you amplify that statement?
A hearty eater is a man who eats three meals, three square meals, a day.
And why does he eat, drink, and be merry?
Assuming he does all three?
Yes, assuming he does. Why does he?
For tomorrow he dies.
Splendid. What kind of repast does he like to sit down to?
Sumptuous repast.
And what does he do with his teeth?
He digs his grave with his teeth.
What happens to him as a result?
He develops a bay window.
A bay window?
Yes, a corporation.
Mr. Arbuthnot, as cliché expert, how would you refer to bread?
As the staff of life. Now, Mr. Boscott, may I ask you a question?
Certainly.
You know what a watched pot never does?
Yes, it never boils.
Right, it never boils. You know that an army travels on his stomach, and that in all musical comedies where a waiter appears, he must have his thumb in the soup?
Really? That's very interesting. Now, Mr. Arbuthnot, just one more question and we're through. And it is probably one of the simplest questions that could be put to a cliché expert.
What is it?
Who ate a hearty breakfast?
Who ate a hearty breakfast? Who ate a hearty breakfast? Well, wait a minute, let me see.
Well, that ought to be easy for an expert like you. Even though you never have been incarcerated.
Just a minute. As district attorney, I object to my colleague's leading question.
Who ate a hearty breakfast? Oh. Too many cooks? No, they spilled the beans. No, spoiled the beans. No, the broth. They spilled the broth, isn't it?
Cliché expert.
I know it as well as I know my own name. That's silly, I can't seem to think.
Just concentrate.
Isn't it aggravating? It's right on the tip of my tongue, too.
Oh, take your time, Mr. Arbuthnot.
Oh, yes, Mr. Arbuthnot. Please take your time, by all means. You've got nothing to do until the 4th of July.
I object to the attitude of my worthy colleague.
But my worthy colleague gave us to understand that the witness was a cliché expert. And he doesn't even know who ate a hearty breakfast.
Hearty breakfast. Hearty breakfast? Hmm. Was it little Jack Horner, by any chance?
Oh, now, Miss Arbuthnot.
Wasn't Diamond Jim Brady?
Perhaps the witness will next suggest that it was Mrs. Jack Spratt.
Was it, Mr. Boston?
Come now, Miss Arbuthnot. Just put your mind to it. Think of Sing Sing and Joliet and Alcatraz. And a certain novel by Anthony Hope about Zenda.
Zenda? Zenda?
Listen, Mr. Arbuthnot. Da, 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 da.
Your Honor, I object.
Your Honor, I submit I have not said a word.
I object to my worthy colleague singing the prisoner song off key.
That's it, I have it. Prisoner. Oh, it was a prisoner that ate a hearty breakfast. Oh, thank you, Mr. District Attorney. Thank you.
I cannot have any such demonstrations in the courtroom. This is a public hearing and not a vaudeville show. Now, be a short recess before we hear the evidence on musical cliché.
Ladies and gentlemen, the order of inquiry seems to have departed somewhat from the scorecard handed out to the spectators as they entered. We originally had scheduled here the clichés of drinking and intoxication, but perhaps that's been moved up until later in the hearing. Now, I'm sure that those of you who've been following the newspapers on the event have read a great deal of speculation by reputable critics, one of whom is present tonight. We have here with us Ladislaus Mishkin, the eminent Hungarian critic, who will give us a little of the advanced dope, so to speak, concerning Arbuthnot's musical investigations. Here is Mr. Mishkin.
Is by me the opinion that today we are going for to hear speaking Mr. Arbuthnot on subject folk music. Reason? It has come to me information this week that important song blogger for old Black Joe was seen together with Mr. Arbuthnot several times together. And furthermore...
I beg your pardon, Mr. Mishkin, but the court is ready to resume its testimony, and Judge Mostel has nodded to Mr. Edstrom to proceed.
It's all right by me, Bob.
Mr. Arbuthnot,
So I understand that you have had some experience as a musician.
Well, I tickle the ivories and scrape a violin. I have a pretty good musical ear. But my voice isn't what it used to be.
I see. Would you care to show us how the cliché can be applied to any particular branch of music?
Well, I have made some study of the operetta. There's no objection on the part of your worthy colleague. I should like to call upon two expert witnesses to corroborate evidence.
No objection.
No objection sustained.
It is a little operetta called The Baroness Bazooka. And as soon as the witnesses are sworn in, I would like to begin with the opening chorus.
Swear in the witness.
There is a momentary lull now as a piano is being wheeled into the courtroom, followed by a man whom I take to be the pianist. The witnesses are being sworn in now, and the pianist is bowing to the bench. He's now seated, and he is adjusting his cufflinks. The witnesses are ready, and in a moment you should hear the Baroness Bazooka.
Well, today is the Baroness Kazuka's birthday.
Yay!
What is surely a sad day for her father, the old...
Yay!
Nearly 48 years old, and not yet wedded yet.
And yet I know of one who could win her if he chose. Who else would I mean but Raoul, the goatherd?
Oh, Raoul. All the village maidens adore him. But he... Hark! Here he comes now.
Oh, we are goat herd. And we heard goat.
Yay!
And we love to herd the goat. Be we Transylvanian or Croat?
Or Croat!
And it's yes, we love it.
Yes, we do.
And it's no, we never part.
No!
Though we cheek by jowl, though we smile or scowl, it's the Croat goat heart song. Give me some goat, some long whiskered goat, to herd the livelong day. Where herds of a feather in goat of swiney weather, it's the goat herd run the land, the goat herd run the herd.
Away, women,
I have no time for idle trippery. I have my work. Women don't interest me.
Not even the Baroness Bazooka herself?
I not even she. We are but simple folk and we tend our goats. And she's but a wench. They would have been her twice for all her beauty.
And would you not now?
And who may you be?
I am the Baroness Bazooka.
The Baroness disguises the peasant. Oh, I'm a traitor.
Oh, no, silly boy. You amuse me. I like your mettle. Come here, goatherd.
Oh, Baroness.
I'll say no more. Today is the strawberry rash festival, and you should be my partner for the day. Let the festivities proceed.
Yeah.
Here is where we're going to a waltz, Your Honor.
Ah, Baroness, you've given me the most wonderful day of my life. I would that it might last forever.
Ah, but it must end. Pleasures are but fleeting.
Albert Baroness.
Yes?
If you were you.
You were you.
And if I were I.
If I were I.
That is the cue for the song, If You Were You and I Were Me. I mean, for the song of the same name.
If I were you, and you were me, what a wonderful world this would be. Oh, the queen of my dreams, by my side.
Oh, sorry, if you were you,
yes.
And I were me,
oh, me.
We would ramble in it, Emily, and our hearts would not part till we died.
If the birds were the trees, and the flowers really were bees, would you still love me, dear? If I were I,
and you were you,
and away. Ah, Baroness, won't that you could be lying just for a day, just for an hour? Baroness, I love you.
What? But you a common goat. Hmm? Oh, they are to presume to begin to assume there might be room in my bosom for a common goat.
Your Honor, I rise to object to the line of hearing you've taken. I submit that this so-called operator is a burlesque and not a cliché. It has no place in this courtroom.
Come up to the bench a moment.
Yes, Your Honor.
On what do you base your objections?
I assume that this hearing was to be held for the purpose of giving people some idea of how we go along unconsciously using hackneyed phrases in everyday speech. Mm. To hold a mirror up to ourselves, as it were.
See ourselves, others see us. Is that the idea?
Just a moment, Mr. Arbuthnot. The district attorney is in conference with me. Please don't speak unless spoken to.
Very well, sir. I'll keep my own counsel, be sufficient unto myself.
Now go on. What are you saying?
As I understood it, Arbuthnot is a servant of the public in that he helps to show us how to avoid poisoning the wellsprings of our speech by the use of time-worn phrases. That is to say, expressions used time and time again.
Since time immemorial?
It's brought to my attention that Arbuthnot has been studied at a number of our higher institutions of learning.
In what way has he been studied?
Closely.
No, I mean in what courses?
Oh, composition courses on how not to write.
Mm. No, go on.
Now, while the clichés up to this point have been admissible for the most part, Arbuthnot has introduced an element which is not truly representative of the cliché. Case of Sullivan versus Fine, New York, 1894.
Yes, I know. Let's get on with it.
And, therefore, I submit to the court that this evidence is irrelevant, beside the point, inadmissible and irrelevant.
All right. Objection sustained. The testimony may be stricken from the record.
But in that case, I shall have to step down and turn Mr. Arbuthnot over to Mr. Berenberg.
Your witness, Mr. Berenberg.
Thank you very much. If it please, Your Honor, at this time I should like to go into the matter of clichés relating to beer, wine, intoxicating liquor, and alcoholic beverages.
Proceed.
Mr. Arbuthnot, I shall begin with a hypothetical question.
Yes, sir?
Assume a man has been overindulgent or has drunk more than is good for him, or let us say he didn't know when to stop.
Yes?
Now also assume, if you will, that this man is on his way home and is proceeding somewhat unsteadily toward his destination. What type of interjection could we expect of such a man in such a situation?
He would undoubtedly say, we won't go home until morning, but it's always fair weather. Whoopee, where do we go from here?
Now, Mr. Arbuthnot, I don't want to appear to be critical, but that did not seem to me to be a very good reading. Not exactly in the manner to... Or the man who had taken leave of his senses under the influence of demon rum would express himself.
Do I understand you wish me to impersonate the manner of speech as well as the speech itself?
Yes, that's what I was getting at.
Very well. Won't go home till morning, for it's always fair weather. Whoopee! Where do you go from here? I'm past it. I'm skissed.
Are you trying to convey to me that you are stinko?
That's it. That's the mot juste I was just searching for. We would not only be that, but also under the weather, the table, and the influence.
Would you say that he's also half seas over and three sheets in the wind?
Yes, he's in his cups and not himself.
Returning to your characterization for a moment, who are you?
I'm Queen of the May. Oh, I've got a snootful. I know whether I'm coming or going. I can hardly walk. I'm drunk as a law, and I'm feeling pretty good.
Mr. Arbuthnot, you certainly talk like an expert in the use of the cliché as applied to the flowing bowl.
I do, for I am. I'm not only an expert, I'm a recognized expert. I'm a barfly, a lush, a tank, a sponge, and a rum hound. I go on binges, benders, sprees, and jags. In other words, I like to partake of liquid refreshment.
Oh, that's fine. Now, let me ask you why, in terms of the cliché... Do you drink, Mr. Arbuthnot?
For three reasons. To drown my sorrows, to cure my cold, and to wet my whistle.
Mm-hmm. Again, hypothetically, when you go into a bar, how do you address the bartender?
If he's a stranger to me, I call him Mac. Your Honor, all strange bartenders are known as Mac, just as Pullman porters are called George, and strangers from whom one wants to borrow a match or bum a dime for a cup of coffee are called Buddy.
When you enter a bar, what happens?
The bartender asks me what's my pleasure. I say, a little scotch, I guess. He brings out a bottle of scotch. If I ask him to pour the drink, he says, say when. I say, fill her up. Oop, that's plenty. Whoa.
I see. Supposing a friend of yours comes in.
What kind of friend, man or woman?
What difference does it make?
A lot. I hate to see a woman drink.
Oh, well, a man friend, then.
Oh, I ask him to bend the elbow.
Bend the elbow?
Sure, I ask him if he'll join me.
I say, Freddie, see what Mr. Krause will have.
What does Mr. Krause say?
He says, no thanks, I never touch the stuff. I say, oh, come on, one little snifter won't do you any harm. So he says, all right, just one. I'll take a little of the same, Freddie, and make mine mostly water. Then he says, here's how, and I say, drink hearty. And he says, first today, and not to be outdone, I say, here's looking at you. And he, not to be outdone either, says, down the hatch. So I say, bottoms up. And he counted as a success to crime.
And then?
Well, that's all.
Oh. I think you've forgotten something rather important.
No, I haven't. What?
How about mud?
Mud? Oh, sure, yes. Mud in your eyes.
Ah, thank you. That is all.
Look, what remains on the docket for this hearing?
Your Honor, we have yet to go through the cliches of political campaign oratory, advertising, journalism, motion pictures, radio...
Well, I don't think we'll have time to hear the rest of them today. What time does the ball game start?
3, Your Honor.
Court is dismissed.
Well, the ball game starts.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it appears that the opening session of the public hearing on cliches has been adjourned earlier than we anticipated. Now, I'm going to see if we can't get Mr. Arbuthnot to the mic to ask him a few questions. He is, at the moment, surrounded by admirers and autograph seekers, but one of our men has just whispered in his ear that we hope to have him here in the radio booth, and yes, apparently he has consented to say a few words, and he's coming up the aisle toward the booth now. In a moment, we will hear from Mr. Magnum J. Arbuthnot, the world's premier authority on the cliché and holder of the seldom-conferred cross of the Order of Michael the Brave with palm, bestowed upon him in a happier era by Hakam Iescu, the former prime minister of Romania. The cliché expert is just entering the booth, and here he is now. How do you do, Mr. Arbuthnot?
Good evening.
I wonder if you'd like to say something to our CBS listeners concerning the...
Hello, Mom. It was a tough hearing, but I'm all right. Give my best to Katie and Sam and tell them I'll be home as soon as the hearing's over.
Now, as a cliché expert, Mr. Arbuthnot, do you care to say anything about the program on which this hearing is being broadcast?
Oh, you mean Columbia Presents?
Yes, sir.
Well, I like it all right. I'm afraid it's over the heads of people in Bangor, Maine and Wichita, Kansas.
Have you ever been in Bangor, Maine or Wichita, Kansas?
Well, in words of one syllable, no.
I gather that you like it, but you feel it's over the heads of other people, is that it?
Yes, I get it, but, well, I'll take my grandmother for instance.
How is your grandmother?
She's doing well, thank you, but you must remember that the average mental age of the listening public is...
Well, there's some dispute about that, I think, Mr. Arbuthnot. In the meantime, do you care to make any statement on this?
Another thing, Mr. Trout. I've been listening to this series. I know that you very often end your programs the same way.
How's that?
Something like this. You have been listening to Norman Corwin's adaptation of The Cliché Expert by Frank Sullivan, with Roland Young, distinguished actor of stage, screen, and radio, in the role of Magnum J. Arbuthnot.
Yes, that is right. That's right, all right. Now, what's your point?
Why do you have to say distinguished actor, stage, screen, and radio? I listened in last week and Canada Lee was distinguished. Week before that, Frederick March was distinguished. How can there be any distinction of everyone so distinguished?
Well, you see, Mr. Arbuthnot, it's a phrase which is more or less commonly used in radio.
Exactly. It's a cliché. It's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm here for.
Well, of course, you understand.
Now, what else do you have on that slip of paper?
It says the Baroness Bazooka was written and performed by Betty Comden and Adolph Green of the Reviewers, and the orchestral music was composed and conducted by Lynn Murray.
What orchestral music?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's next week.
What's next week?
Next week at this time, Columbia presents Cromer.
Who?
It's the name of a town in England, and also the name of a broadcast which Corwin wrote when he went to Britain for CBS in 1942.
What distinguished actor is going to star in Cromer?
Joseph Julian, distinguished actor of radio, who originally narrated the series from London. And one more thing.
You mean, and that's not all?
Yes, and that's not all. Cromer is to be the first of a trilogy of broadcasts on City.
Trilogy?
Yes, 3 broadcasts.
Or a trio, you mean? Isn't there a lot of broadcasts on the same idea? I always say 2's company and 3's a crowd, you know.
Well, perhaps that's beside the point, Mr. Arbuthnot. We were discussing the matter of signing off the program.
You mean bringing the program to a close?
Right.
I give that considerable thought. What you usually say is something like this. This is Roland Young speaking, right, so far?
Just what the doctor ordered, thanks. And now to conclude...
Just one last word, Mr. Trout.
Well, go right ahead.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.